Welcome to the Pint and Click podcast. I'm Dave. I'm from the Des Plaines Public Library. I'm here with Tony and Jamie, and we're here to make recommendations about video games and comic books, movies and music, books, anything you can think of. And we've got quite some interesting picks today. I'm going to go ahead and go first. I have been watching Walking Dead, the show on AMC. It's been around for years, but this half season that they've just started has been spectacular. I don't know if you two have been watching Walking Dead. A lot of people start and give up, come back, stuff like that. But if you like the show, this is definitely the time to come back. Technically, we're in episode 9 of season 6. It gets confusing because AMC does, here's a first half, here's a second half. But our survivors are now kind of stable. They have their own little city. They've got little walls. They've got houses. And they're starting to create an economic network with other survivors. Trading supplies, trading food, sometimes medicine, sometimes skills, like if there's a doctor available in one city and not in another. And that economic network is coming under siege by a gentleman named Negan. That's the character's name. Mm-hmm. And our survivors, Rick and Michonne and Carl and several more that have made it this far, are basically hiring themselves out as mercenaries. Like, we'll just go kill this guy.
Okay.
Give us a bunch of food and we'll go kill this guy for you and kill all his men. And it's just been action-packed. Now, one of the problems I have with the show early on is it gets slow. There's kind of just a lot of, like, decompression, a lot of emotional processing. And that's interesting here and there. But especially in, like, season 2, they had whole episodes where this character talks to that character, and then that character talks to a third character, and these four characters come together. They have a conversation about a fifth character, and it's just boring. Nothing happens. But this season has been, there's been action, there's been twists, there's been character changes, there's been developments, and every episode has been exciting. My girlfriend has been begging me to watch the show for the last couple of years, and this is the season where I'm back, and I'm a Walking Dead fan.
Was the season before this kind of in a slump, like you were saying before, that sometimes it's slow? Do you feel like this is just like bringing it back and recharged, or was the last season before this also pretty exciting?
The first half of season 6 was interesting, but not as exciting.
Okay.
They found a settlement that was kind of untouched by the zombie apocalypse. These people had houses, they had power, they had solar power, they had plenty of food, they had plenty of medicine, and they simply had to erect walls, and they were more or less safe from the outside. No one seemed to know about them. And so it was an interesting dynamic between the residents of Alexandria, who had been more or less unchanged by the zombie threat, and our survivors, who are wholly changed, who have their personalities shattered into pieces and glued back together as best they can, and how those two groups of people meshed. That was very interesting. That was not bad. But it's not like the second half of season 6, which has just been characters dying, new characters being introduced. There's been good action scenes. There's been changes in relationships that you didn't expect. The first half of season 6 didn't have that. Season 5 before it, I felt was very slow. That's when I most recently lost interest. But I really like what they're doing now, and we've got probably about 6 more episodes to go between now and April, so I'm back in. Sunday nights is Walking Dead for me.
That's great. You mentioned the action aspect. Do you find it to still have the same amount of horror or kind of suspense that some of the earlier episodes had? Because I think I saw the first half of season 6 with Alexandria and how it slowly develops a lot of those plots and the tension, and then, you know, obviously, if you're in a place of security where you're making trades and things like that, it's more thoughtful and more about the human interaction than about the versus zombies or versus the world. I mean, does it keep all that?
I don't think it's as much horror-focused in this place because they go out and they fight zombies, or it's more or less they put zombies down when they have to type of idea. They're not lurking in the shadows. They're not around every corner because they have the walls around them. They're still zombies. They have to go out and fight them. They go on patrols looking for supplies, things like that. So they're around, but it's been kind of pure action. It's been guns and knives and stunts and things like that. The horror aspect kind of was present in season 5 and the beginning of season 6. But right now, it's definitely action-focused.
Very cool. Yeah, and I guess they also have the Fear of the Walking Dead series that's kind of a totally different storyline that if you want that that's horror, right. you can always watch that.
What is the storyline? Is that just a spinoff?
It's a spinoff where you're following a totally different group where I believe, I don't know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's where they are slowly seeing it develop within society rather than just the main protagonist waking up and
right.
a lot so, of the changes already happening.
Yeah, Walking Dead kind of starts with Rick waking up after
okay.
the big climax of a zombie apocalypse, and they never really dealt with the day-to-day changes, the experience. And Fear the Walking Dead is a spinoff set in L.A. Instead of the eastern, southeastern United States.
And it's slightly earlier.
It's, yeah, okay. as the virus or okay. the outbreak is happening and okay. how people are coping with that.
Do you enjoy that show too?
Not really.
Okay.
I only saw the first season and I didn't particularly like the characters, care about the characters. The setting is interesting, but I didn't like the individual episodes that were produced. I'm so high on regular Walking Dead right now that I might go back and watch because now season two of Fear the Walking Dead is coming soon. Mm-hmm. That might be interesting.
Yeah.
But the first season of Fear the Walking Dead, absolutely not. Do not recommend that in okay. any capacity. I didn't like it at all.
I thought it was all right.
Walking Dead is one of those shows that I know I should watch, but it also just seems so, the amount of episodes just seems so insurmountable right now that I'm like, okay, this will be a huge undertaking. And when will I sleep if I'm going to delve into that?
I think it's okay just to jump in. I don't think...
At season six?
Yes.
Without watching the first? That's like antithetical to my entire watching TV shows.
I know, belief. And I believe that. I wouldn't recommend that for other shows. Mm-hmm. For this particular... It certainly would be better to start from the beginning.
Okay.
No doubt about it. But you're not missing as much jumping into the middle of Walking Dead as you would be jumping into the middle of Breaking Bad.
Okay. Is that because there's just less character focus or character development that you need to know about? Or
I think it's an aspect of the theme of the show okay. where people are just dealing with day-to-day, moment-to-moment, how am I going to survive? How am mm-hmm. I going to survive? So there's not a lot of callbacks. There's sometimes flashbacks, and mm-hmm. but those are very clear within an episode, how okay. they relate to a character.
I've also read that one of the mantras that the creators live by is that they do kind of want to reinvent it every eight or so episodes to basically present the characters and the audience with something very new and very different from what they expect.
The show has actually had several different showrunners. Sometimes season to season, there's a whole new showrunner. And so there's a whole new tone. There's a whole new writing style going on in the show. So if, like me, a couple of season two I didn't like, season five I didn't like, mm-hmm. but season four and season six I liked very much. So if you were to start from the beginning and if you were to slow down and be like, I don't know if I like this show so much, like skip forward a season.
Okay.
Or skip forward to the present. Don't let the slow seasons
like bog me down.
Right,
and
exactly.
make me quit.
Okay. Because there's good stuff in there somewhere. There's good stuff coming. The first season is great. It was very expensive and very carefully produced.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you just want to watch those, I think it's six in the first season, just watch those and be done. That's also not a bad idea.
Okay.
So that's second half of season six of Walking Dead on AMC Sunday nights. So Tony, you're up next. Tony, what are you going to talk about?
All right. So I'm talking about 2666. It's a play that I recently saw at the Goodman Theater, which ran between February 1st and March 20th. It is a ridiculously ambitious project for a play because it's based on a 900-page novel. The play itself ran for 5 hours, including
what?
Three intermissions. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
And I like... for some reason didn't realize that when I got in the car and, you know, we got there. But I had previously listened to this audiobook, enjoyed it. I enjoy this author, Roberto Bolaño, who's a Chilean author. So the play is actually split up into five parts, similar to the way the book is split up into five books. A lot of it takes place in Mexico, but it's a very international and world-influenced book. The beginning of it is it follows academics who are following this German author, and the German author is this very enigmatic figure where nothing is known about his biography. It reminded me, seeing it in person, reminded me a lot of almost like Wes Anderson, or like if Almodovar and Wes Anderson made a film or like made a short play, this is what it'd be, because it was academics and a lot of like strange references to authors I have no idea mm-hmm. about and stuff like that. But it was also really quirky and witty, and it had some dark humor, but mainly it was kind of, the plot revolved around a love triangle between the academics and things like that. So each of these parts are mildly connected, but it goes and talks about a widowed philosophy professor or a widowed academic who they meet at the end of their story. And he's obsessed with the fact that his daughter is young and lives in this city, which is called in the play Santa Teresa, but it's based on the real life city, Ciudad Juarez, which is kind of the main theme and main focus of this book that everything kind of comes and converges onto, is that there was a serial crime wave of killings and mutilated bodies found in and around this city. It's a very real problem, but this book kind of dramatizes it and uses it as a backdrop and just kind of uses it as this kind of pervasive force that's always there and always in the background. So this father is very anxious about it. And then the following part is the part about a detective, and it's kind of more done like a crime noir drama. A lot of references to, it's a very referential novel, and then it's bringing in, you know, like movies and authors and things like that. So one of the references here is Robert Rodriguez. And even though that's not really a crime drama, those are like strangely action-packed and violent, but also a Mexican filmmaker. And, you know, so a lot of this culminates in the fourth part, which is kind of shows the ineptitude of the police working there to really solve anything, and maybe how it's a larger systemic problem, and maybe how like cartels or maybe something like that is influencing all of this crime. And then finally, the fifth part is about the author itself that these academics are pursuing and trying to find out. And they, you know, they're hot on his tail, it would seem, at the end of their story. But we learn kind of the whole life picture of this enigmatic German author and how his life somehow tangentially relates, and how he was, you know, a German in World War II, and how he afterwards found writing as a source to unleash his creative force, and then how he created all these great works. And it's kind of strange because it's very difficult for me just explaining from the synopsis for you guys to draw connections between these. Mm-hmm. But somehow in the way that the story is told and then seeing it unfold, it makes it really obvious how like the violence of the war might be related to the violence of different parts of this story. Mm-hmm. And I would just say, number one, it was an amazing production, and I can't believe that like 15 extras portrayed 80 characters and basically were on stage for that long and remembered all of those references. Like that alone was a fantastic thing to see. But then reading the book is also a transcendent thing where, you know, it's greater than the sum of its parts. And I was actually really happy to have read it after reading it, even though like the really violent parts about talking about the crimes and talking about the police force and things like that were really difficult to hear. It's definitely like for mature audiences, and it's very, you know, at times very sickening even. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess I would recommend the book, and or at least to definitely check out Roberto Bolaño as an author if you get a chance to.
What was the tone? Was it fun? Was it gruesome or dark?
I would say it was generally light to begin with the academics, and it would change from, you know, act to act. But it definitely got very dark in parts 3 and 4, because when it starts talking about that detective who's working on some of these crimes or working on this story, he's a reporter, not so much a detective in the third part.
I see.
Yeah, the reporter getting flown to Mexico ends up working on this story just because it's such an obvious story. And, it's not what he was flown there for, but he gets wrapped up into it. That's more like a noir, straightforward Hollywood story where it centers on one protagonist. So the mood is actually much lighter in those types of things, like where it's the drama between academics or the excitement of this guy uncovering a case and kind of tapping into something much larger than just him. Mm-hmm. And it's more of a, I don't know, anticipatory, and you're invested, like a mystery novel, I guess would be the best way to put it. It's more like a mystery and kind of light in that regard.
And the show was 5 hours, you said, three intermissions. So how did it keep you engaged for that long of a time? Because that's almost unheard of for shows.
Yeah, thank you for asking, because I really wanted to bring up the fact that it was the light, sound, and projection and set were all incredible.
Okay.
Parts of the set would double as projection screens, so they could turn it or project words. They actually filmed a movie for part of the crime drama one, the part of the reporter kind of going in, and he ends up in all these like seedy locations and bad situations, and they can't show all of the things look right on the screen. So they pre-record it. They have them disappear, and then they pull down a projector screen and show like a film of them doing that. And then I think the fact that they changed tone so many times made you not feel like you knew what was going to happen, you know, in the fifth act or something like that. Like you just had no idea what was coming up because, you know, one part was so different than the next.
So they kept it visually stimulating with different multimedia stuff and then with the different stories.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think the average person would be able to sit through that for 5 hours? Or do you feel like it's a more of a niche audience?
Yeah. No, I do think that if you're interested in like the artist's involvement in like larger problems, or if you like a literary style of novel that's kind of like maybe self-referential and things like that, that you'd be pretty interested in it. I don't know that anyone would get a kick out of it. I think mm-hmm. it's kind of political and it is kind of specific about this place, but it is connected to a lot of other themes. So I don't know. I'm not really sure if other would, because I'm someone that has already read this. And then my wife, who I saw it with, has already read something by this author. So okay. she kind of knew what to expect. So it's hard to say.
Okay. Well, thank you, Tony. Mm-hmm. Jamie, you're up next. Jamie, what do you got to talk about?
I recently started using this app called Click, CLIQ, and it purports to help you meet new friends. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because there's so many dating apps out there like Tinder and all the related ones that are spun off of that. But there's a lot less focused on friendship. And only mm-hmm. recently have a few apps started to crop up that are mainly focused on helping you form connections, like platonic connections with other people through these apps. And one of the newest ones is Click, which is based in Chicago. And the interesting thing about Click is that you have to have your own group of friends first. Like, you can't go on this app by yourself. You need at least one other friend, and you create your own Click. Mm-hmm. And then you scroll through on the app all different other groups of friends. And if you think that you and the other group of friends would connect, you invite them. If they think you're someone that they would connect with, they accept your invitation. And then it opens a group chat, and then you can chat, and then hopefully, like, make up plans to actually meet in person. Sure. So I've been doing that for about a month, and I've been trying to see if this is actually an app for meeting platonic friendships or if it's just a glorified Tinder, because I think a lot of other apps that say, you know, oh, you know, like meet new people, they're actually just dating or hookup apps mm-hmm. type of a thing. So that was like what I went into it trying to figure out. My friend and I sent out probably over 100 invitations to people to try to figure out, like,
sure.
what the gender breakdown would be. And it was actually really interesting that we had about equal percentages of groups of, like, two guys and mixed gender groups accept, but almost no groups of females accept our invitations. And then no female-only groups ever invited us to, like, meet up or anything. But my experiences with it were all really positive. Like, the people I met on these clicks were really interesting. And they're really focused on having new experiences, too. Mm-hmm. Like, not just necessarily meeting people, but, like, actually doing something and mm-hmm. exploring. And so mm-hmm. they try to set up, they give you suggestions for places you can meet or bars you could go to and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How do you know, or what makes you think you might click with another click? Do you fill out profiles? Do you talk about interests?
Well, that's really interesting because at this point, the functionality is really minimal of how much information you know about the other person.
Okay.
So you have 5 photos, and then you know their first name, their mm-hmm. age, what school they went to, and their job. So right now they don't have a profile, even though that's something they're working on. So mm-hmm. you're solely basing it on 2 bits of information, your education and your job, which sure. are mostly like class and, you know, intellect-based sure. judgments. Mm-hmm. And then whatever is in your photos. So people have to try really hard to express their personality in your sure. photos. So someone's riding an elephant, or you're hiking in the woods, or mm-hmm. you're reading Eat, Pray, Love, you know, mm-hmm. because you really, that's your only chance to express any type of personality mm-hmm. you have, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see how it changes, like who invites who and things like that, once you actually do have a type of text profile where you can say, these are the specific things I'm interested in, or, you know, this is what I kind of want to do on this night or stuff like that.
Right.
I went on a click with this guy who was part of this like social club in Chicago called Soho House. And my friend and I met up with him there, and it was like this beautiful like club in Chicago that I had never known about. And it was kind of like a country club, but for hip young artists, Chicagoans, and there was a boxing ring in the middle, and just people were just like duking it out. And I was like, I've never seen a place like this sure. before. So it's kind of like, it did introduce me to new experiences and things mm-hmm. like that. But I think it's interesting that while there is not an overt kind of like dating atmosphere on the app, it does seem like people are only interested in the opposite gender mm-hmm. of yeah. hanging out. So it does seem like, at least in the back of your mind, there is, people do want to keep that option open, I think.
Sure. Or maybe that's a difficult thing just to do casually that is easier to do with the app.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is finding friends of the opposite gender
yeah.
that you can just hang out with and do something with.
That's true, too.
So maybe this fills a particular void effectively.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. Yeah.
Is it recently released, this app? I mean, it seems very new if they're still developing the whole profile thing.
Yeah, it's still in like an open beta phase right now, they're saying. And so it's based in Chicago. So right now it's pretty much only located, like all the users are in Chicago. And they said they have a few thousand people, but it's still relatively new. So it hasn't scaled larger than that right now.
And do you think it might take off? And would you recommend it?
I would definitely recommend it because I think going into it, I was like, I'm pretty sure there's going to be a lot of like creeps on this, so far all the people I've talked to and, you know, the people I've met up with have been people I actually would want to see again. Mm-hmm. And tonight I'm doing trivia with some of them for the third time, so it actually does seem like it's developing, even though you're basing it only on pictures and things like that.
Sure. I'm already wondering what my five pictures would be.
I know. I had to keep switching mine up. I'm like, which ones would be the most successful? What would make me most appealing to new friends and things like that? So.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Great. And so we're going to have a group discussion now. This is going to be a little bit wider than usual. It's going to be about The Fast and the Furious, all seven movies, which ones we like, which ones we don't like, the entire series as a whole, the coming of Fast 8, the success of Furious 7. So Tony and Jamie, how do you feel about The Fast and the Furious?
I'll go first because, I feel like one of the Oscar snubs of this year was probably the See You Again song because it was the emotional climax of Furious 7. My history with The Fast and the Furious began about 2 weeks ago, and I've since watched them all because I saw the seventh one and basically...
That's great.
It was a transformative experience. I think part of going into watching the seventh one, I love action movies and I have this... I don't know exactly why I liked this one so much other than I knew going into it that there had to be something redeeming and awesome about it because I had a good solid recommendation from a friend I trust. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I wouldn't have just turned it on because I feel like there's a mystique around what the Fast and Furious movies are. And I don't, like people have a share, are very vocal about their opinion about it perhaps. And that's maybe changed the fact that I've lived through the 2000s and never saw a single one.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, speaking of never seeing a single one, I saw the Tokyo Drift one, which I think is number three.
That's right.
So the third one? Okay. And I enjoyed it, but I think I don't understand the whole phenomenon of it without seeing all of them. So I'm curious as to what makes this sequence of movies, so engaging that they would be on number eight?
In my experience with The Fast and the Furious... Number 7 came out early last year, and in the beginning, the first couple of movies are kind of just racing movies. Mm-hmm. Kind of, let's all look at cars and let's have just fast cuts of, here's a steering wheel turning and a gas pedal being pushed. And
that was my impression from what I saw.
And that's kind of it. Yeah, for 3 as well. Once they got into 4 a little bit and 5 especially, it became a full blown out action movie. 5 is a heist movie. Okay. We're gonna steal money from a drug dealer, I think. Mm-hmm. And how are we gonna do it? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like Ocean's 11.
Yeah, we need to hire the perfect team. And
right,
I never knew that.
And then how can we steal the money from this drug dealer? 1 and 2, how can we use cars to do it?
Okay, so the cars become like secondary, kind of to this other.
They're central. Okay. It's not just about racing. Okay. 1 and 2 are just about competing in street races. Mm-hmm. Now 5 and 6 and 7 have been more about 5 is how do we pull off this heist? 7 is, the cops need us because we're the only people cool enough to take down this worse bad guy.
who's also good with cars
somehow. So it's matured.
Okay.
It's become a lot more well-rounded. Before it was just, you have to like this street racing idea. Now it's become, they're funny and there's great action and there's great car scenes and a lot of the actors have matured with their characters. Character arcs have happened. Relationships have changed. And so when you go to see 6 and 7, soon 8, it's a whole experience now. Mm-hmm. Where these characters have history before and you get to see how it plays out. They've done the most ridiculous thing you ever thought you could ever see in Furious 7. And how are they going to top that in Fast 8?
That's how I felt. Yeah. I mean, I had no idea what I was getting into. So they topped the most ridiculous thing I'd ever seen in 7 right after they did something ridiculous. Yes. It's like, but then it really pushes the envelope in terms of they kept all of the original camera and looking at the RPMs and looking at the gear shifting and things like that. They kept a lot of that in the modern action scenes, which is actually kind of incredible. So it makes everything feel so fluid and like so well refined of a craft, and even just the minutiae of the action itself.
That's
so.
Really interesting that it's kind of the opposite arc that you see in a lot of other movies where like the sequel or the third one kind of the storylines kind of filter out and then, you know, it just becomes worse and worse until, you know, it's straight to DVD and, you know, no one's really watching it. But here it seems like the characters and the storylines are actually like developing and coming into their own more.
Yeah, and even one of the weird and funny facts about it is that in some ways, you could argue that they kind of devolved between 1, 2, and 3, but like 3 is also chronologically ahead of 5 and 6. So it's just a strange way of telling this. Like they designed the story so that the plot of number 3 actually comes into effect in the future movies, which is...
Yeah, 1 through 4 have kind of a funny timeline. I think that's one of the things that is strong about the series is that if anything that was wonky about 1, 2, and 3... they found that quickly and were able to jettison it and focus on what was positive about 1, 2, and 3. And let's double down on those things in 5, 6, and 7.
It's almost like a TV series in a lot of ways. Like it's evolved to the point where you want to find out what's going on with the characters, what's their next thing. And once you're into it, you're kind of invested in the whole thing, I guess, as part of it. Like once I watched 7, I was invested to find out how did they get to that point.
Sure. So I just love Vin Diesel. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
I think he's great. I think he's great in these movies. I think he's great as Riddick. And so
Riddick.
I'm
love Riddick.
Always excited to see a new Fast and Furious movie, if only for him. I like Ludacris, too. But
it's great in those.
One funny thing about the series is if you've never seen a Fast and Furious movie, I would actually recommend that you start with, say, 5.
Okay.
Don't necessarily watch 1, 2, 3, and 4. I think 4 is really bad, actually.
Okay.
And 3 is strange because it's out of continuity. And then 1 and 2 are not bad. They're all right. But 5 is the one. 5 is the first one with The Rock. So, again, Dwayne Johnson and Vin Diesel.
He plays the character he was meant to play, I feel like. I mean, I was a huge fan of The Rock. When I saw him embody this character, I was like, I haven't seen like very many Rock films. I think I saw The Doom, and I haven't seen very many other films. But like he just plays the perfect hard-ass cop. It's just so perfectly designed for that person, Dwayne Johnson. So
it sounds like I'll have to go against all my beliefs and start this and The Walking Dead, like...
Somewhere in the middle.
Halfway through.
I know.
To get the best part.
And I'm sorry. They introduced him as an antagonist, which is also great.
In 5.
Yeah, in 5, so...
But then he comes around. Again, these relationships, you know, they twist and turn in ways that an action movie... What you would think of as a dumb car movie shouldn't have relationships this strong. And it's not drama, it's not poetry, but it's not bad.
Okay.
You know, enough happens to keep every movie interesting along the way. So, yeah, Fast 5 is a good place to start. Or just go watch 8, like when it comes out in theaters.
I'll have to watch at least 5, 6, and 7 before I can't just go in seeing 8. I need to have a little background.
But it's a phenomenon now. Yeah. Furious 7 made $1 billion in 10 days, something like that, worldwide take.
That's so interesting because we're not really a car culture anymore, compared to, like the 60s, where and these movies are still doing really well.
But if you do love cars, they're awesome movies too.
They're
like even better, which is,
So it's like bonus.
Yeah.
If you don't like cars, there's nothing like pulling you back. It's not a detriment.
1 and 2, you got to like cars.
Okay.
You got to like cars, you got to like street racing, and you'll like 1 and 2. If cars aren't enough, they start adding guns, they start adding money when 5, 6, and 7 come around. To make it a much more broad appeal. I have a lot of friends who you would not expect to be Fast and Furious friends who love these movies. And again, it's the later ones that have really sold them on this is good. Or they'll go see 7, just say, why not? I don't know. Just whatever. And they came back from 7 and they're like, oh, should I see 6? Should I start from the beginning? And, suddenly they're into it because just one of them was enough to grab them.
Okay. Well, I'm convinced I will watch. What is the name of the fifth one?
Fast 5.
Fast 5. Okay.
I know it gets complicated.
Yeah. Too many alliterative words and they keep switching them around the order.
I'm very proud of myself here at the library when a young boy comes up to me and asks for a random Fast and Furious movie. He'll say, give me Fast and Furious 3. I'll say, aha, that's Tokyo Drift. I know which one it is and where to find it because they all have, the Fast and the Furious versus Fast and Furious. That's 4. And then we got Fast 5 and Fast 8 are going to... coming out of the side of Furious 7.
Needlessly complicated.
At least they're adding numbers now.
Yeah.
Furious 7, Fast 8. That'll make it easier.
Do you think they can keep going? What is the, the threshold?
I mean, the real threshold is when they stop making money, and made a lot of money. Okay. So I'm sure they're going to make eight. I don't know, though, with losing Paul Walker, you think would have been the end of it, but they're going to keep it going. So I'm excited to see what else they do. And it really is. I mean, Paul Walker was the original. Him and Vin Diesel started the whole thing. They were friends throughout making the series. But now it's become just such a huge ensemble of the same actors, the same characters coming back movie after movie, that it can still be interesting. The characters are still compelling, even losing someone as big as Paul Walker. So that's Fast and Furious, The Fast and the Furious, The Fast and Furious, however you like to call it. Tony and I recommend it, and I think Jamie will be a fan soon enough.
We'll revisit this next time after I've watched them. I can give my opinion.
Okay, well, that's the podcast for today. Thanks, everyone, and we'll see you next time on the Pint and Click podcast.